So let's begin. So could everybody mute their microphone for me? Thank you. Alrighty, Serge. Stay kitty. Alright. So the consciousness of the atom, lecture one, the field of evolution. There has probably never been a period in the history of thought entirely resembling the present, excuse me. Thinkers everywhere are conscious of two things. First, that the region of mystery has never before been so clearly defined. And secondly, that the region can be entered more easily than has hitherto been the case. It may, therefore, perhaps be induced to render some of its secrets to investigators of all schools. Now, if investigators of all schools pursue their search with determination, the problems which we are faced as we study the known facts of life and existence are susceptible of clearer definition than heretofore. And though we do not know the answers to our questions, though we cannot as of yet, or we have not as of yet discovered the solution to our problems, though no panacea lies ready to our hand whereby we can remedy the world's ills, yet the very fact that we can define them, that we can point in this direction in which the mystery lies, and that the light of science, of religion, of philosophy has been shed upon vast tracts which were earlier considered lands of darkness, is a guarantee of the success of the future. We know so much than was the case 500 years ago, except in a few circles of wise men and mystics. We have discovered so many laws of nature, even though as of yet we cannot apply them, and the knowledge of things that are, and I choose these words very deliberately, has made immense strides. Nevertheless, the mystery land still remains to be opened up, and our problems are still numerous. There is the problem of our own particular life, whatever that may be. There is the problem of that which is largely termed the not-self, and which concerns our physical body, our environment, our circumstances, and our life conditions. If we are an introspective turn of the mind, there is the problem of our particular set of emotions and the thoughts, the desires, the instincts by which control action. Group problems are many. Why should there be suffering, starvation, and pain? Why should the world as a whole be in the thrall of the direst poverty, of sickness, of discomfort? What is the purpose underlying all that we see around us, and what would be the outcome of world affairs, viewing them as a whole? What is the destiny of the human race? What is its origin? And what is the key to its present condition? Is there more than this one life? And is the sole interest to be found in that which is apparent and material? Such queries pass through all minds at various times, and have passed through the minds of thinkers right down through the centuries. There have been many attempts to reply to these questions, and we study them. We find the answers given fall into three main groups, and the three principal solutions are held out for the consideration of men. The three solutions are, first, realism. Another name for this school is that of materialism. It teaches that the presentation which we have in consciousness of an external world is true. That things are what they seem, the matter and force, as we know them, are the only reality, and that it is not possible for a man to go beyond the tangible. He should be satisfied with the facts as he knows them, or science tells him they are. This is a perfectly legitimate method of solution, but for some of us it fails in that it does not go far enough. In refusing to concern itself with anything except that which it can be proven and demonstrated, it stops short at the very point of where the inquirer asks, "That is so, but why?" It leaves out of its calculation much that is known and realized as true by the average man, even though he may be unable to explain why he knows it to be true. Men everywhere are recognizing the accuracy of the facts of the realistic school and of material science. Yet at the same time, they feel innately that there is, underlying the proven objective manifestation, some vitalizing force and some coherent purpose which cannot be accounted for in terms of matter alone. Secondly, there is the point of view which we can best perhaps call supernaturalism. Man becomes conscious that perhaps, after all, things are not exactly what they seem to be, and that there remains much which is inexplicable. He awakens to the realization that he himself is not simply an accumulation of physical atoms, a material body, a tangible body, but that latent within him is consciousness, a power, a psychic nature which link him to all other members of the human family, and to a power outside himself which he must perforce explain. This is which led, for instance, to the evolution of the Christian and Jewish point of view, which posits a God outside of the solar system who created it, but was himself extraneous to it. The systems of thought teach that this world has been evolved by a power of being or being who has built the solar system and who guides the worlds aright, keeping our little human life in the hollow of his hand and sweetly ordering all things according to some hidden purpose which is not possible for us with our finite minds to glimpse, still less to understand. This is the religious and supernatural point of view, and is it is based on the growing self-consciousness of the individual and in a recognition of his own divinity. Like the point of the view of the realistic school, it embodies only a partial truth and needs to be complemented. The third line of thought is what we might call the idealistic. It posits an evolutionary process within all manifestation and identifies life with the cosmic process. It is the exact opposite of materialism and brings the supernatural deity, predicated by the religionist, into the position of a great entity or life who is evolving through and by means of the universe, just as man is evolving consciousness through the medium of an objective physical body. In these three standpoints, the frankly materialistic, the purely supernatural, and the idealistic, you have the three main lines of thought, which have been put forward as the explanatory of the cosmic process. All of them are partial truths, yet none of them is complete without the others. All of them, when followed alone, lead into byways and into darkness, and leave the central mystery still unsolved. When synthesized, when brought together and blended, and when unified, they embody, perhaps, I offer this simply as a suggestion, just as much of our evolutionary truth as possible for the human mind to grasp at the present stage of evolution. We are dealing with large problems, and tampering, perhaps, with high and lofty things. We are trespassing into regions which are the recognized domain of metaphysics, and we are endeavoring to sum up in a few brief talks what all the libraries of the world are embodying, and therefore attempting the impossible. When he's talking about how science is turning into metaphysics, I mean, if you ever talked about quantum physics or heard about quantum physics, it's basically metaphysics. You know, it's talking about the science of consciousness and how that it affects our reality is absolutely metaphysics. I mean, they've been studying this for thousands of years in the Hermetic schools of the world. It's called mystic psychology. So then we have all that we can do is take up briefly and cursorily one aspect of the truth and then another. All we can possibly accomplish is an outline of the basic lines of evolution, a study of their relationship to each other and to ourselves as conscious entities, and then endeavor to blend and synthesize the little that we can know until some general idea of the process as a whole becomes clearer. We have to remember, in connection with every statement of truth, that each is made from a particular point of view. Until we have further developed our mental processes, and until we are able to think in abstract terms as well as in concrete, it will not be possible for us to fully answer the question, what is truth? Nor to express any aspect of that truth in a perfectly unbiased way. Some people have a wider horizon than others, and some can see the unity underlying the different aspects. Others are prone to think that their outlook and interpretation is the only one. I hope in these talks to broaden somewhat our point of view. I hope we shall come into the realization that the man who is only interested in the scientific aspect and who confines himself to the study of those manifestations which are purely material is just as much occupied with the study of the divine as his frankly religious brother, who only concerns himself with the spiritual side, and that the philosopher, after all, occupied in emphasizing for us the very necessary aspect of intelligence which links the matter aspect and the spiritual, and blends them into one coherent whole, perhaps by the union of these three lines of science, religion, science, and philosophy, we may get a working knowledge of the truth as it is, remembering at the same time that the truth lies within ourselves. No one man's expression of truth is the whole expression, and the sole purpose of thought is to enable us to build constructively for ourselves and to work in a mental matter. I should like to outline my plans this evening, to lay the groundwork for our future talks, and touch upon the main lines of evolution, the line which is most apparent, is necessarily that which deals with the evolution of a substance. With the study of the atom and the nature of atomic matter, next week we will touch upon that. Science has much to tell us about evolution of the atom, and has wandered a long way during the past 50 years from the standpoint of the last century. Then the atom was regarded as an indivisible unit of substance. Now it is looked upon as a center of energy, or electric force. From the evolution of substance, we are led very naturally to the evolution of atoms, or to the congeries of atoms. And there will then open up to us the most interesting consideration of forms other than the purely material. Forms existing in subtler substance, such as forms of thought and the racial forms, the forms of organizations. In this dual study, one of the aspects of the deity will be emphasized. Should you choose the term deity or one of the manifestations of that nature, should you prefer that less sectarian expression, we shall then be led to the consideration of the evolution of intelligence, or of the factor of mind which is working out of ordered purpose in all that we see around us. This will reveal to us a world which is not blindly going on its way, which has back of it some plan, some coordinated scheme, some organized concept which is working itself out by means of the material form. One reason why things appear to us so difficult of comprehension is involved in the fact that we are in the midst of a transition period, and the plan is as yet imperfect. We are too close to the machinery, being ourselves a very integral part of the whole. We see a little bit of it here and another little bit there, but the whole grandeur of the idea is not apparent to us. We may have a vision, we may have a high moment of revelation, but when we contact the reality on every side, we question the possibility of the ideal materializing for the intelligent relationship between the form and that which utilizes it seems so far from adjustment. The recognition of the factor of its intelligence will inevitably lead to the contemplation of the evolution of consciousness in its many forms, ranging all the way from these type of consciousness which we would consider subhuman, though the human, through the human, up to what may logically be posited, even if it may not be demonstrated, to be superhuman consciousness. The next question which will face us will be, what lies back of all of these factors is there, behind the objective form and its animating intelligence, an evolution which corresponds to the I faculty, to the ego in man? Is there in nature, and in all that we see around us, the working out of the purpose of an individualized self-conscious being? If there is such a being, and such a fundamental existence, we should be able to see somewhat his intelligent activities, and to watch his plans working towards fruition. Even if we cannot prove that God is and that the deity exists, it may be possible to say at least that the hypothesis that he exists is a reasonable one, a rational suggestion, and a possible solution of all the mysteries we see around us. But to do that, it has to be demonstrated that there is an intelligent purpose working through forms of every kind, through races and nations, and through all that we see manifesting in modern civilization. The steps that purpose has taken, and the gradual growth of the plan will have to be demonstrated. And from that demonstration, we shall perhaps be able to see what lies ahead of us for the coming stages. Let us for 1 minute consider what we would mean by the words evolutionary process. They are constantly being used, and the average man well knows that the word evolution suggests an unfolding from within outwards, an unrolling from an inner center. But we need to define that idea more clearly and thus get a better concept One of the best definitions which I have come across is that which defines evolution as the unfolding of a continually increasing power to respond. Here we have a definition that is very illuminating as we consider the matter aspect of manifestation. It involves the conception of vibration and a response to vibration. And though we may in time have to discard the term matter and employ some such expression as force center, the concept still holds good, and the response of the center to stimulation is even more accurately to be seen. In considering human consciousness, the same definition is of real value. It involves the idea of a gradually increasing realization of a developing response of the subjective life to its environment, and it leads us eventually on and up to the ideal of a unified existence, which will be the synthesis of all lines of evolution, and to the conception of a central life or force which blends and holds together all evolving units, whether they are units of matter, such as an atom of the chemist and the physicist, or units of consciousness, such as the human beings. This is evolution, the process which unfolds the life within all units, the developing urge which eventually merges all units and all groups, until you have the sum total of manifestation which can be called nature, or God, and which is aggregate of all states of consciousness. This is the God to whom the Christian refers to when he says, "In him we live and move and have our being." This is the force or energy which the scientist recognizes, and this is the universal mind or oversoul of the philosopher. This, again, is the intelligent will which controls, formulates, binds, constructs, develops, and brings all to an ultimate perfection. This is the perfection which is inherent in matter itself, and the tendency which is latent in the atom, in man, in all that is. This is the interpretation of the evolutionary process. But this interpretation of the evolutionary process does not look upon it as a result of an outside deity pouring his energy and wisdom upon a waiting world, but rather as something which is latent within the world itself, that lies hidden in the heart of the atom of chemistry, within the heart of man itself, within the planet, and within the solar system. It is something which drives all on towards a goal, and is the force which is gradually bringing order out of chaos, ultimate perfection out of temporary imperfection, good out of seeming evil, and out of darkness and disaster that which we shall someday recognize as beautiful, right, and true. It is all that we have visioned and conceived of in our highest and best moments. Evolution has also been defined as cyclic development, and this definition brings me to a thought which I am very anxious that we should thoroughly grasp. Nature repeats continuously until certain definite ends have been reached, certain concrete results have been brought about, and certain responses made to vibration. It is by recognition of this accomplishment that the intelligent purpose of the indwelling existence can be demonstrated. The method whereby this is achieved is that of discrimination or of intelligent choice. There are in the textbooks of different schools many words which are used to convey the same general idea, such as natural selection, or attraction or repulsion. I would like, if possible, to avoid such technical terms because they are used by one school of thought to mean one thing and by another something different. If we can find a word similar in intent, yet not tied to any particular line of thought, we may find fresh light thrown upon our problem. Attraction and repulsion in the solar system is but the discriminating faculty of the atom of man demonstrating in the planets and the sun. It will be found in atoms of all kinds. We can call it adaption, if we so choose, or the power to grow and adapt to the unit to its environment through the rejection of certain factors and the acceptance of others. It shows itself in man as free will, or the power to choose, and in spiritual man it can be seen as the tendency to sacrifice. For a man then chooses a particular line of action in order to benefit the group to which he belongs and reject that which is purely selfish. We might finally define evolution as ordered change and constant mutation. It demonstrates in the ceaseless activity of the unit or atom, the interaction between groups, and the endless play between one force or type of energy upon another. We have seen that evolution, whether it is of matter, of intelligence, of consciousness, or spirit, consists in an ever-increasing power to respond to vibration, that it progresses through constant change by the practice of a selective process, a policy, or the use of the discriminative faculty, and by the method of psychic development or repetition. The stages which distinguish the evolutionary process might be broadly divided into three corresponding to the stages of life of a human being: childhood, adolescence, and maturity. Where man is concerned, these stages can be traced in the human unit or the whole race. And as civilizations pass and increase, it should surely become possible to trace the same threefold idea in the human family as a whole, and thus ascertain the divine objective through the study of his image, or reflection, man. We might express these three stages in more scientific terms and link them with the three schools of thought as earlier referred to, studying them as: A, the stage of atomic energy; B, the stage of group coherency; C, the stage of unified or synthetic existence. All right, so let's begin guided meditation.